things that rush through your head, right? As you know, from the I did it to, you know, is this Meb holding me up, who's my teammate going to Rio, to mom and dad coming up in tears and my wife coming up in tears holding our baby. And there's so much emotion that it was really a special experience. It was euphoric.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being here with me today for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast, brought to you by runnersconnect.net. So I hope you had a wonderful few days with your loved ones, and I want to thank you for spending some time with me during this busy time of the year. Last week, we dove into the science with Dr. Jordan Santos, and he told us about some of the groundbreaking research he's published in the last few years about running mechanics and efficiency. And today we're going to be talking to a very humble Olympian who not only has a great story to share himself, but he's just very relatable and he gives us all advice that we can use in our own training. Jared Ward has climbed up the ranks over the years, but he doesn't have one big secret to his success. He's just improved little by little, year after year, through hard work and just making little changes. And he's remained true to who he is, and I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation. Jared is also known as one of the best pacers in the running world, well, in my opinion anyway, and he always times his races perfectly. He always makes it to the finish line having run his best race, and it helped him to become an Olympian and then finish sixth in the Olympic marathon, so obviously working for him. There is going to be so much for you to learn here, and I know you're going to love him. So firstly, I want to thank Saucony and Body Health for this sponsoring this podcast, and then we will get right to Jared Ward.
Running is tiring, we know that, but the accumulation of miles is what really gets us, leaving us sore and exhausted. I take Body Health Perfect Amino tablets to improve recovery, and you should too. You will notice a difference, and you can learn more at bodyhealth.com. This podcast is brought to you by Saucony. For those of you who have not heard of this brand, they're the best. Really. I don't just wear Saucony for every run, but they also have a great collection of casual clothes for everyday use, which I live in. Use coupon code TINA for 10% off your next order.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Jared.
How you doing?
I am doing well. I'm starting to get ready for marathon, which actually by the time this goes live, I will have run the marathon. So hopefully I'll be in my recovery phase. But yeah, I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm great. That's an exciting time. I get excited when, you know, close to marathons, race day, like that's a fun time. And you're overly rested, right? Mm-hmm. The taper almost makes you edgy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really don't like it because I just feel on my runs, I feel sluggish. And the rest of the time you feel a bit, like you said, like restless. And so I don't like it. I just would rather it be here, but we'll get there soon enough. And by this time this goes live, I will know how I've done. So that we'll be peeking into the future. Speaking of marathons, obviously this year you kind of jumped into the limelight with the Olympics. But actually, you were already doing pretty well. And maybe, you know, the average runner may not have known who you were or what you were doing. But you were already sponsored by Saucony. And, you know, you were already, I think you were the number one runner in the USA road circuit in 2015, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you already were having a lot of success. But maybe you could share a bit of background up to that moment as a runner. Because I think a lot of people think that you were just one of those people that appeared out of nowhere. But really, you'd been kind of stepping your way up over years. And just that was the final step to put yourself in the limelight.
Well, sure. And it was certainly, 2016 was certainly an incredible year. And I had some very fortunate breaks and ran some good races at the right time. But I think, you know, I've mostly been blessed to feel like I've never had a year, really even a season in running, that hasn't been better than the season before. And it's just been very, a very slow, consistent, and it, you know, not not without setbacks, but as a whole, I could look at a season and feel like I've grown and improved and become a better person and a better runner. And that's been big. You know, my marathoning began back while I was still in college. In 2013, I had remaining track eligibility, but I had exhausted my cross country eligibility. And so in the fall, Coach Eystone suggested that we train for and run a marathon. And then I would come back and run my last season of college track and then kind of transition towards the roads. And at this point, I really was excited to continue to run a little bit on the roads and try to make some U.S. team. It had always been a long time goal to make a U.S. team. As a junior, trying to qualify for a junior team here in the States, it, I missed it by one spot and was close. And I remember trying on the uniform and being excited about it. And I thought, someday I'm going to get one of these. And so I was excited to continue maybe marathoning or other road racing to try to make a team. But I didn't have my sights set on such lofty aspirations as making an Olympic team. But the marathon in 2013 that Coach trained me for that fall went fairly well. I ran Chicago. I ran 2:16 fell apart a little bit at the end. I didn't heed Coach's pacing warnings as diligently as I should have. And so I paid for probably a couple of minutes at the end of the race coming down the stretch there. But really loved the marathon, loved training for the marathon. And I would say I fell in love with the marathon before I even raced it. I just loved the training. I loved the long runs and the long tempos and the long intervals. And so I knew after that first marathon that I was going to keep doing some marathoning and had qualified for the Olympic trials on that first go. And so I was excited to compete at the Olympic trials a few years down the road. And so that began the transition. And I really was just very fortunate. You know, the end of 2014 season in track, I broke my fibula, and so I had a little bit of a setback there. But then 12 weeks later, I ran the Twin Cities Marathon, and I ran 2:14. And so I was pleased to jump back into it that quick. And then 2015 was just a whirlwind year. I ran LA Marathon and ran well there, and ran a few other of the U.S. championships and performed well. And as you had mentioned, was fortunate to win the U.S. circuit, road racing circuit that year. And it just continued to improve. Saucony increased their sponsorship with me, and I was able to kind of get the financial backing to be able to say, okay, I'm going to try and do this Olympic thing.
Although you didn't go the route of like most people who would have been at that level. You know, you've got a sponsorship from a major brand in that you decided to 100% dedicate your life to your training. You kept being a professor, and from what I've read, you didn't even tell your students that you were really training for this and you were at this level, which is amazing, or must have been amazing for them to kind of know it. So what made you decide to, I mean, maybe it's because you love it, but what made you decide to keep going with the teaching rather than going the traditional professional runner route?
Well, there's a few reasons. One is because I really do love it. You know, I would consider in a lot of ways running is my job and teaching is my hobby, right? I teach one class 2 days a week, and so it's not a real extensive load, and I have so much fun with it. I love working with students. I love office hours. I love seeing kind of the light bulb click on when I'm teaching or grading through projects or exams when I see that students have really mastered materials that they struggled with. It's very rewarding. And so one reason that I do it is because I love it so much. But the second reason is, you know, and Tina, you know this well, is that the running world can only last a short time, right? I mean, even if you're fortunate to have a career like, you know, like Meb or Dina or Paula, you know, the incredible runners, it still ends when there's a lot of life left to live. And so I want to be involved in enough of this other stuff that I really enjoy doing that I can kind of make a, hopefully a smooth transition into whatever exciting career is next.
And did you have any, was any part of this about the whole identity crisis that a lot of professionals struggle with? And that's why I am doing the job that I do for Runners Connect is because I couldn't handle the idea of just being a runner. Did that come into play for you, or was that not really?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I do worry a little. I've never had a very unbusy portion of life, so I guess I don't know what it would be like if I had the time to sit down and watch Netflix for 5 hours a day or whatever all these other professional athletes do, right? I don't know how I would respond to that, but I do like having things to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have, you know, I'm married and I have three kids, and yep, and that can be things to do, right? Even when I have a day off and I'm at home all day, it feels like it's a full day of something, sure, right? So, you know, and Erica and I have talked, Erica, my wife, you know, about how if, you know, as these kids grow and as running, you know, over the last few months has become more demanding just in terms of appearances and, you know, a whole new world, athletic world that I didn't know about. You know, I thought it was just running, and now I'm becoming more aware that there's other things involved than just running when performances go well, right?
You're a celebrity now.
And so I've been traveling for things other than races, and that's new, mm-hmm, right? And so as the running stuff has become more busy, I've wondered if someday I'll get to a point where I have to say, okay, I got to put this other stuff on the back burner because it's just too much to handle. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to drop, have the running aspect struggle or the family aspect struggle as I'm trying to juggle these other aspects that really are, kind of smaller portions of what my life is right now. Mm-hmm. And so it may not always last like that, but for now I love it. I love coming to school a couple days a week, and that's a fun life.
Mm-hmm. And has life changed at school since you kind of became this somewhat of a celebrity as an Olympian?
It seems to have changed a little bit. You know, and I don't know how to pinpoint exactly what has changed, but
the people ask for your autograph in the hallway
occasionally, and you know, I'll get my students, you know, wanting to press questions, especially the runners, about different races or training things or what it's like being at the Olympics or things like that. And so, it in some respects, the dynamic has changed some, mm-hmm, but in a lot of ways, it's still the same, right? I mean, I think I remember laying in bed the night after the Olympic trials, when I had qualified for the Olympic team, and I was in bed late. I often can't go to sleep well for the first couple of nights after a big race like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, right?
No, I hate it.
You're exhausted, but you can't sleep,
yes,
right? And I remember laying in bed, and everyone else is asleep, my kids and my wife, and I remember kind of feeling frustrated that I didn't feel different. Right. I was like, I accomplished this goal that took so much work and was this dream. And I was fortunate to have a great race on the right day, and I qualified for the Olympic team. And I kept thinking, I should feel different. Mm-hmm. Right. But you don't. You feel the same. It's the same. You know, it's like getting ready for another race. You know, you had a good race. You know, it's like, great job. And you move on. You still pull your pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else. Right. Yeah. And it was kind of dawned on me that, you know, it doesn't matter the, you know, what you do and the accomplishments and things, life's still going to be the same. And to the average person, you know, you're just another person still. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was a good reminder. It was a good, you know, it's good to keep grounded, I think. And in that aspect, but the long answer to a short question of, in a lot of ways, life is still the same, right? I still have to grade papers, and I still have to prepare lectures, and I enjoy that stuff, but it doesn't change.
Yeah, no, so true. And I think that's good you brought that up, because, you know, I think we're all guilty of kind of thinking, well, if I could just get to X, then I'll be happy and I'll be right, satisfied. And I'll go to bed thinking, but you never do. And there's always more you want. You always want to be at the next level. And I think it's great for people listening to hear that, to know that, you know, even someone who has qualified for the Olympics, run in the Olympics, run well at the Olympics, still feels like you said, life is the same. And I kind of actually, funnily enough, that dawned on me, for those listening, when we were at the World Half Marathon in Cardiff, I actually went up to Jared, and just, he was sitting eating his breakfast quietly, and there I was like, hi. So And that was, for me, that was that event. That was the one I always thought, once I do that, running a world championship for my country, I'll be happy, I'll be satisfied. But the same thing as you, you wake up the next day and you're like, okay, well, let's just get on with things, because, yeah, like you said, nothing changes. So
right.
It's funny for me that that was the time I met you, was when that moment was for me. All right, so I want to ask you about something that I know a lot of people are really interested in, which is you being, some call, the king of pacing. And you even did your master's thesis on optimal pacing, which is even funnier now we have talked about your first marathon, and you said that pacing kind of bit you. And firstly, before I kind of dive any deeper into it, was that the moment you kind of realized that the math person in you kind of decided you wanted to figure this pacing thing out, or was it something else?
Yeah, I mean, because when you're in, you're running college distance races up to 5 and 10K, right? I think, at least for me, it was trying to harness the trick of like getting in the zone and racing so that something magical could happen, right? Mm-hmm. You have these races where you don't know how, but somehow you got competitive and you just started rolling with 4 or 5 laps to go on the track, and then you finish and you look at the clock and you're like, wow, I don't know how that happened,
yes.
Right? And that's how you look at racing. It's like, it's this trick of getting competitive and getting in the zone and just going, right? And covering moves and racing. And the marathon is different, right? Mm-hmm. You can like get in the zone and cover moves and race, and maybe you can make it last for like 5 miles or 6 miles or whatever. But then you you look up and you have 20 miles to go. Right. And so it's just this different, it's kind of this different bear. And I, realized that the marathon is more a race of me versus me than me versus the people around me. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm prepared for a pace because of my training, and that's the pace I'm ready for. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if no one else is going to go that pace, then I'm best off to go out and run my pace out in front by myself. And if someone else is in the race, like Eliud Kipchoge, and he can run 10 minutes faster for a marathon than me, I'm not going to get like some magical day and just cover his move and win the gold medal, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it kind of dawned on me that this marathon bear is a little bit different, and you have to get excited, and you have to be tough, and you have to race hard, and you have to... And in some aspects, racing is the same, but in a lot of aspects, I think it's different enough that you just have to run your race.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. My husband, who's also my coach, is always saying, you don't race a marathon, you manage it. You manage it to the best of your ability, to where you are at that current point in time. And we've done the same thing, like with races in the marathon. I've always been, let people go, do whatever you want to do. I'm going to do my own thing. So I very much race the same way as you do. But so you've kind of taken it to an extreme. And I want you to kind of maybe share with our listeners, how you, firstly, how your thesis was. Maybe share with us, what you found out about successful runners and how they were able to have their best race based on pacing.
Well, first of all, I think that, Tina, you pointing out that I have taking it to an extreme was one of the nicest ways I've ever been called a nerd. So thank you. I am a nerd, though, and I get excited about that. And it was while I was still in college. It was right after this first marathon. I was still wrapping up college and into my master's program, and began working with marathon data and looking at optimal pace strategy. And that's kind of where it started. And looking through this data, we compared Boston Marathon qualifiers to those who didn't, and looked at what men and women are doing differently and different ages. And it was interesting to find out that it seemed like people who were hitting Boston Marathon qualifying marks were doing a much better job at maintaining the pace they started the race at. Right. So they weren't starting faster than they could maintain, whereas more average runners would have much more significant pace slowing throughout the race. And it seemed like these Boston qualifiers would also do a much better job at taking advantage of downhill terrain in the race. So you get you know, a more average runner is kind of plodding along at their pace, and whether it's uphill, downhill, flat, whatever, it's a very similar pace. Whereas the more elite runners, as you get closer to elite, when they hit a downhill, they go and they take advantage of that. And when you hit an uphill, you slow. And it's more about maintaining a consistent metabolic rate than it is about containing a consistent pace, right? And so, and pace is relative, right? It's relative to heat and humidity, and it's relative to terrain and all sorts of other things, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I realized, was it seems that the better runners adjust better, right? And so, and, you know, and it, some other interesting things from the research were maybe that as people got older, their pacing profiles closer exhibited those of the elite athletes. So when we get older, we get smarter, right? Up to a certain extent. It seemed like our 60 and 70 year olds, they would just kind of revert back to the way they used to do it, right? And I think in general, we can see that when we hit certain ages, we don't want to let go of what we could do at younger ages, right? Mm-hmm. So we still start the race at the same pace, hoping that we can do it just like we did when we were 40, and we just don't quite have it anymore. And so we need to adjust. We don't have it at that level anymore. And so I think that there were some things from this research that maybe some things that applied directly, but a lot of it was indirect, right? And it was me, you know, making guesses and extrapolating from what these results said to maybe what it means for an elite athlete and what it means for me. And then it became just gathering data from my marathons, right? So how did the pacing go in my marathons, and how did I feel, and what training led into X pace, right? And so now, you know, and I only have 5 data points, right? Which is not a lot for a data scientist, but every data point that I get really fuels what I know about myself. And I can take apart a marathon and say, okay, I've had this, you know, I did my 5x2 mile repeats in this time, and I've had long runs, 20, 25 milers that I've hit at these times, and the temperature was 70 degrees and my mileage was 120 miles or it was 115 mile average or where it was. And all of these pieces play into saying, okay, on race day, I'm ready for a 5-minute mile pace. Or because it's 70 degrees and humid in Rio, I need to monitor my pace a little bit. And it kind of helps me twice. I think it helps to have a plan that is going to serve you up at a good starting point, right? And Coach and I always leave a little bit of room on either side for a great day where maybe I can go a second or two per mile faster, or a slow day where I need to adjust that. But then it also gives you confidence in the race. You know, at mile 20 or at 25K into the Olympic marathon, I wasn't feeling that great. But I was able to say, no, I've had great training, and my training indicates that I'm ready for this pace. So I can sustain 5-minute pace because my training said I could. And it kind of gave me the confidence again to just continue going at that pace because that's what the data says. And so I think, that analytical approach has helped me in a number of ways.
Oh yeah, I love that. And that's so true with you know, you saying how it helped you with the confidence. And I think that would be a great point for any of us to think about, is if you've figured out what pace you are in current fitness to run, if you are in that bad patch and you just say to yourself, maintain, or like, just keep it up, you know, you can hold this. And interestingly enough, my word when I am struggling is maintain. Like, okay, you don't have to go any faster, but just maintain your pace, which is that same thing of, you know, keeping just, you know, your training says you're at this point, so believe in that point. And so what would you say for people who are thinking, okay, this all sounds well and good, you know, maybe I can use some calculators to figure out what my pace is. And Runners Connect does have a temperature calculator. We have all kinds of predictor calculators, but say you use those, but someone says, okay, but I really struggle at the beginning of the race not going out too fast. What do you tell yourself, or how do you kind of keep yourself under control when it is that tempting part? You know, Chicago is a great example of this because it's so flat and fast. That you can, you know, easily get carried away. So how do you kind of keep yourself under control when there are moves early, or when you do get tempted early?
Well, Coach normally gives me a hard cap. You know, we had decided going into, so when we were in Rio, you know, the night before doing our final race planning, and we know the weather, you know, we know it's going to be kind of damp. It's going to be super humid. It's not going to be wicked hot, but it's going to be like 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And so there's, you know, we're playing all these things in, and coach and I eventually said, well, you know, we think the pace for the day, you know, I was prepared for about a 212 marathon, right? Or maybe just under. And so he said, you know, we're going to say, you know, you want to be in the race, and there's benefits to running with people, right? And I think anyone who's ran a marathon in general, and certainly in a competitive sense, knows that when you're in a pack and you're able to relax in a pack, it's just easier on your mind, right? Mm-hmm. And so we want to be able to take advantage of pack running as much as we can and be in the front pack as much as we can, because that's exciting and it's motivating, and you want to give yourself every opportunity to have that special day. Right. And so coach gives me a range, and we talked about how, well, if the pace is a little faster than 212, that's okay. But how much faster until we have to say, you know what, this is too fast, too early. And so I had a hard cap at 210 pace, which is about 457 miles. And so we said, if the pace gets down 457, it gets down below 457 pace, I need to just say, this is not my pace, mm-hmm. you know, and let go of it. And so so I have my watch to gauge that, but really in the training, I can feel the pace. And, you know, Tina, you're at this point in your, you know, when you're fit and you're ready to go and you are trained, you know, coach says, go out and run a 5:30 mile. You can do it mm-hmm. pretty close. You know, it's just, it's amazing, how in tune, you know, we can be with our well-trained bodies. Right. And so, you know, I have the watch on as like a safety net to make sure I don't, but I know what pace I'm running, and really maybe even more so than what pace I'm running, I know what it feels like and what it's supposed to feel like. Right. And sometimes on race day, adrenaline can mask that. So I think you have to be aware of what's around you and aware of the clock, but coach and I have a hard cap. And I think that's, how we prevent some of that getting carried away.
Mm-hmm. Great. And that's really, I do the same thing. Yeah. So anyone listening, you know, maybe figure that out for yourself, figure out, you know, I am not going to be any faster than this. So you said, you kind of know, you feel your body, which is actually one of the things I was going to ask you about, because, we're very similar in a lot of ways with this, but I don't look at my watch. I might look at the mile just to make sure I'm not too fast, maybe the 10K to make sure I'm not too fast. But the rest of the time, I have no idea what pace I'm running, no looking at the watch. And I encourage other people listening and people I know to do the same. But do you, so you're saying you don't use a watch either, or you do regularly check?
I have it on as a backup to be able to get a couple of points of feedback throughout the race, you know, just to know where I'm at and to make sure things are okay. I'm certainly don't consider myself a slave to it, but sometimes at the end of marathons, I've found having a watch can be helpful if you get to that point where you say, hey, you know, I'm exhausted and I'm doing 1 mile at a time. And, you talk about the mindset of just maintain pace, right? And I think that's running through a lot of our heads at the end of the marathon. And sometimes for me, it's been helpful to be able to click on my watch and then the next mile click again and say, okay, I'm maintaining pace. And that can be a confidence booster, right? And if you're not maintaining pace, if you're slowing, then maybe it gives you enough information to make a calculated decision on, is it the right decision to continue to maintain, try to maintain pace and know that it's going to gradually slow? Or am I 8 miles out and I'm already slipping? Does this mean I need to adjust my pace and then try to maintain a new adjusted pace?
Oh, okay.
And so I think that change, you know, like I said, I don't consider myself having enough data to be a marathon, expert yet. Mm-hmm. Right.
I need to
be able to gather more. But I think that as you become more in tune with your body, the body's always going to be your best gauge, right? But until we become real in tune with our body, I think relying on watch and other physical cues are maybe okay. So okay. I think there's a hierarchy there.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. Hopefully this is being helpful. I mean, I'm definitely taking a lot from this. So, you know, this is great. And thank you, Jared. And were there ever moments where you did kind of feel doubt and you did get tempted to kind of like leave your plan? Like, I'm thinking about the Olympic marathon trials where you, I think, I can't remember what mile it was, maybe 16, when Tyler Pennell like kind of surged a little bit and some people went with him. Was there a point where you kind of were like, oh, you know, should I go? Or would did you at that point have enough confidence in yourself to say, nope, I'm just doing my own thing?
Well, so I don't know that it amounted to confidence in myself, right? I mean, when quality runners take off, and in a setting like that where it's the Olympics on the line, right? Mm-hmm. The Olympic trials takes the top three people, and they take off, and they're all quality runners. Tyler's every bit as good as those of us that made the team, right? And so when they take off, it's not so much confidence, me thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to catch them later. It's more of a, I play the odds in my head, right? I say, well, I can cover this move and start running 4:45 miles, but I'm not trained for that. So I can roll the dice and say, maybe this is the one in a million day and I just have this magical performance and I bring it home, right? But it's probably not going to happen. And so ultimately, the best thing that I can do is get to the finish line as fast as I can get there. And it takes a good bit of self-control to say, well, the best plan for me is to let them go and to say, I'm going to starting from right now where this pack's blowing up, I'm going to get to the finish line as fast as I can. And if three people beat me to the finish line and that's the team, then it doesn't make sense logically for me to beat myself up because three other people ran better than I could run that day. Mm-hmm. Right. You have to be okay with what you can do, right? Mm-hmm. And be realistic with it and realize that ultimately at the end of the day in these races, we're all just trying to become the best that we can be, right? And hopefully we have great competition that can help us get there. But it's easy to say now, right? It's hard in the race. When I was watching them pull away, I was certainly grasping at straws, right? I was saying, well, this is Tyler Pennell's second marathon, maybe, you know, talking myself into my decision to wait, right? Knowing that I couldn't sustain that pace. Mm-hmm. I was saying, well, it's Tyler Pennell's second marathon. He's never ran in this heat and he'll come back. Like, well, Meb's 41, maybe he'll die, right? Maybe, probably not. You know, Galen Rupp is early in his marathon career. This is his first one, but he's probably the best distance runner America's ever seen in terms of at least on the long distance track, right? And so, you know, I'm grasping at straws, and then it takes a bit until I realize I need to just run my race, and I need to be okay with potentially taking fourth place at the Olympic trials if I put together the best race I can. And it's so much more. It brings the control all back to home, right? We get anxious when we're losing control, right? When we're feeling like our fate at whether or not we make the Olympic team, where for me, if I figure my fate on whether I make the Olympic team or not rests in their hands, is one of them going to blow up? And do I get that chance? As opposed to just saying, you know what, I'm going to control what I can and worry about that. And we'll see how things stack up when we get to the finish line.
Oh, absolutely. Every word you're saying is just exactly what I believe in. And it's just so, so good to hear. Just everything about that. Hopefully everyone listening, you were really taking this in and maybe listen again, because what Jared is saying is just like pure gold. So, and I don't think I've ever said pure gold before. So that was a strange term to come out of my mouth, but it's what came to mind. And then what about, like, once you had moved into fourth, you know, you had quite a few miles to go. What do you tell yourself when you are hurting? You know, for example, that situation is probably the easiest, because there would have been stages where you were really hurting, but you kept fighting. What do you say to yourself?
You know, I try to find ways to bait myself along to the next mile marker or the next water bottle or mm-hmm. something, right? I think sometimes, you know, just like losing control can feed anxiety, uncertainty, which is, I guess, just a different loss of control into the future can bring anxiety. So when we're thinking, you know, 18 miles into a marathon, I don't know what's going to happen at the end. That's what's nerve-wracking, right? And not knowing, you know, and in the Olympic trials at 18 miles, I was starting to feel cold, you know, dehydration. It was 75 or 80 degrees at noonday in dry LA, and I was dehydrated. I finished the race about 2 gallons with 2 gallons less of water than I started. So I was 15 or 16 pounds lighter. And so, you know, I'm wondering all of those things, you know, what's going to happen, and you start to get nervous. But if you can bring yourself back to right now, what I got to do is I got to take one more step at this pace, right? And however you get yourself to that moment, I think is okay. Whether it's just for a second, breathe and smell the air and get back to right now, or whether it's think rhythm in my legs, rhythm in my arms, stand tall, you know, whatever it is that gets you to the now, I think is crucial. And then break up the rest of the race into manageable size chunks. Don't think I have 8 miles to the finish line. Think about how you have 2 miles to your next water bottle, mm-hmm. or a half a mile to the next water station. And just think, I'm going to get there and I'm going to get this water in me or my juice in me or whatever it is. And then I'm going to worry about the rest. And that really has worked for me. I think just, you know, it's interesting that in life in general, we can get, you know, we can get anxious and kind of bogged down by thinking about all of the things that we have on our desk to do, right? It's the same in school. I can have a big stack of papers to grade and lectures to prep for and research to do and all this stuff and think there's no way I can get through all this stuff. Or instead of worrying about how I can't get through it all, I can prioritize it and pull the most important thing off the list and start on that and then worry about the next thing after that. And it's an amazing thing that once we stop worrying about everything to do and start chipping away at it, the ball just starts getting steam and you start getting excited about what you're doing. It's the same in a marathon. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, at the end of the Olympics, it was going from station to station after 25K and getting my water bottle. And then eventually it was chasing down person to person who were fading back, you know, people who had covered moves that were faster than they could sustain. And it was catching person to person. And I think just trying not to bite off more than you can chew can go a long ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Great advice once again. And how did it feel at the trials, crossing the line and being welcomed by someone as legendary as Meb is? Was that
amazing? It was an amazing feeling. You know, there are so many things that rush through your head, right? As you know, from the I did it to, you know, is this Meb holding me up, who's my teammate going to Rio, to mom and dad coming up in tears and my wife coming up in tears holding our baby. And there's so much emotion that it was really a special experience. It was euphoric.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can only imagine. And you know, we all have those moments of where we've accomplished something that we've dreamed of for years. So it just really is one of the best feelings, and non-runners sure. really struggle to understand what that's like, but it's so worth it. And then what was the marathon experience like? Was the whole Rio thing as what you expected and, you know, just the experience?
I mean, it was incredible. I went down for the whole thing. So I was there from opening to closing ceremonies. So I spent a lot of time in the athlete village and training down there, and then the race. But everything was really, it's cool at the Olympics that so many countries come together, mm-hmm. right? We look at a world that's like, that just seems like there's so many different war-torn areas, right? And there's treaties all over the place. And we have countries that our country gets along with and countries that our country doesn't get along with, right? But at the Olympics, everybody's there to compete. And you don't feel any of that in the Olympic Village. You mm-hmm. don't see people from one country and think about the political barriers that are there. You just think about an athlete that is coming together and competing and sharing an experience. And that is so cool. And it's cool to be a part of that and to meet athletes from so many different cultures. But even to meet people from, you know, my own team and be spending time with Meb, right? Warming up for the marathon with Meb and picking his brain on what was going to happen and asking for his advice. That was cool. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of very special experiences there, right? Mm-hmm. But really, you know, but when it's all set up and done, those are some fun memories. But the reality is, you know, kind of like we mentioned earlier, it's another race, you know, and it's another race that I learned some things about myself in and that I have some takeaways from and some things to work on. And as soon as the race is done and you're home, you're starting to think about the next race, you know, and it's all in the past. And people don't, you know, frankly, like, people don't care about the past for very long. You know, it's just another race that's in the books, and it was a cool experience. But the learning, you know, the takeaways from it are the coolest things, right? The things that make you a different person because of these experiences, that those things last. And that that was cool to be able to have some things like that to take from the Olympics and go forward and say, you know what, it is worth working hard and trying hard in a race. Mm-hmm. Not because necessarily because you make it to the Olympics and it's cool to have the bells and whistles of the Olympics, but because you get another experience to race the best in the world, and you learn something else about yourself.
Oh, yeah, right? Definitely. And would you say that had you not finished as well as you did at the Olympics, that you would have had that same kind of takeaway? Or do you think you would have been a little more stuck on the, you know, what could I have done, or, you know, what should have happened?
Certainly. You know, we're hard on ourselves as distance runners, right? And so it's very, you know, it seems like we don't achieve our goal for a given day more often than we do achieve our goal, right? And so I'm fortunate to have an experience there in which I did achieve my goal. Yep. And was able to come home feeling like everything came together well. And I learned from that, right? But you learn from the experiences that are more negative as well. And I think it would have amounted to a different learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good point. And what about training going into it? Did you change anything, or how did you prepare for something that was that big? Or was it a situation where, okay, this has worked for me in the past, I'm going to, you know, keep going with it?
Very much that. I mean, I think you get so few marathons that you're really not willing to experiment too freely on any of them, right? Mm-hmm. And so I certainly tweaked some things. I increased a little bit of volume on cross training. I spent more time stretching and staying loose. And so there were some aspects that have changed. I'm still learning, figuring out altitude training. So the first time I moved to higher altitude was for the trials. And so the second time was for the Olympics. And so I'm still learning things about how my body responds to altitude training. And so there's still some tweaking there. But Coach Istone, you know, I'm kind of in the Coach Istone and myself relationship. I'm the nerd that has the over attention to detail, right? And Coach Istone is kind of the overarching coach that, like, sometimes has to wave his hands and be like, Jared, you don't need to worry about that. You're really, really fit. Just go be fit, you know? And so I think Coach Istone has been a good balance there, in which he'll say, you know, when I say, how do I prepare for running in the humidity of Rio? You know, more humidity than I've ever raced a marathon in before. And Coach Iceland will say, well, just get really, really fit and you'll be okay. Right. And so I worry about the details, and I wear my long sleeve shirt on a treadmill and things like that. And then ultimately it's Coach talking to me the night before that says, hey, listen, you're really fit. Just go be fit, you know? And I think that it's kind of maybe an inverse relationship of what most people have with their coaches, but it's worked very well for me.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I'm actually, again, the same with my husband. So it's kind of cool.
Maybe there's more runners like me in the world than I think there is.
Well, I may be one of them, so that's good. And so you just mentioned that about, you know, training and you and your coach and, you know, not really changing too much. But you seem to run very well in the heat. I'm sure people are wondering, like, why or how are you able to run well in the heat when that's typically a situation when most struggle?
Sure. I don't, you know, my three best marathon times have been my most three recent ones. So there's some correlation going on here, right? But my three best times have come when the temperature has been 70 degrees or above, which gets me excited to maybe get into a more optimal marathon someday, right? and run one that's in better conditions and see and learn something about myself. But I think what I've learned with heat running is that it's just so critical to get in as much hydration as possible. I think, you know, when it's above 70 degrees, I don't know that anyone is going to keep up with the water loss that our body's doing, especially if we're working really hard and we're working at a threshold pace. But I think there are things we can do to try to offset how much water we're losing as much as possible. And so I've treated my stomach as a muscle, just like every other muscle, and I've tried to train it. So on these long runs, I'm trying to get a little bit more fluid in me every time I have the opportunity to get it, right? So I'm practicing as often as I get it in the marathon, and trying to get a water bottle every 5K. So I'm going to try to, instead of just get 2 ounces from this, I'm going to train my stomach to get 4. And, you know, if there's going to be water in between these bottles, I'm going to take advantage of grabbing water. My first successful hot marathon was in LA in 2015, the year before the trials. And I took a cup from every single mile, like from the very start. And I would get in a swig of it and then dump the rest on my head. And I think that it helped to kind of offset how much water I was losing. And so I think that's been helpful. You know, but the reality is, aside from training for the Olympics, I've been training in Utah weathers, which is snow and 30 degrees Fahrenheit and cold, right? And so I've done things like keep a long sleeve shirt and tights on while I run on a treadmill and try to trap some of that heat and kind of some of the other tricks that it seems like other people do. But I think there's a lot of wisdom to coaches' advice too, in just get really, really fit, you know, and then you have to be realistic. When it's hot, you need to adjust your pace. If you've been training in optimal conditions, you can't expect to go out when the weather is significantly hotter and run the same pace. You have to be realistic. And so I think learning how to adjust your pace and pick the right pace and getting really fit are the biggest things. And then you learn how to get a little extra water and you train your body to withstand that heat. And there's some things like that. But the big things are going to be the same big things for anything, right?
And yeah, very helpful. And so just as you obviously knew it was going to be hot in Rio and you were able to train for it, what would you say to someone who maybe is, you know, 5 days out from their race and they discover it's going to be hot? Would you say from your experience or your recommendation that you would think people would be better off just overdoing it, kind of taking in, maybe like you said, you did, taking in water every mile, maybe just a little bit, then you know, risking that dehydration?
Absolutely. I think there's, you know, there's a lot of wisdom to the even somewhat religious phrase of like, just every little bit, right? And little bits at a time, and milk before meat and things like that, right? But I think that it's easy to grab a cup every mile and just drink a little, right? You don't need to be trying to push massive, you know, doing things drastically different than your training, right? But if you've practiced drinking some, try drinking some just more often, right? And getting that in. And I also think, but I think the biggest thing is just realize that you have to adjust realistic expectations when it's hotter. You have to slow down.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's hardest for so many people when it's hot. Say, hey, I've trained for 5 minute miles. You know, this is my day. I'm going to go for it. And it's, you know, it's probably not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, that, I guess this is a good point for me to mention that, we, like I said earlier, we do have calculators from Runners Connect, and I'll put links to those in the show notes and to Jared's thesis, which he has kindly said he will share with us at runnersconnect.net/RC139. Okay, and one other thing I wanted to mention, just because I'm not sure how many people know this, but I thought it was kind of cool. So Molly Huddle obviously did very well in New York, you were one of the reasons that she decided to run in her Taipeis for the marathon, which is one of the flats that Saucony uses. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but not a typical marathoner shoe. It's very light. It's kind of more, I would say, maybe 10K, 5K race style, but you do race in that, but I did have some questions from listeners who wanted to know what shoes you train in, and you do race in the Taipei. Do you do all your races in those shoes, or what does your shoe situation look like?
Well, I'm blessed to be able to have a variety of shoes that I can choose from, right? Saucony has been good to me in that way. So I have, you know, it's hard for me when someone says, so what shoes do you use? What shoes do you train with? I think, well, I use a lot of them. And so I don't know, you know, if I had to buy all of them, I might not buy all of these shoes, right? So I'm blessed in that way. But I like the Type A's for marathon running because I like it to be lighter. It seems like the research says you want more cushioning and a lighter shoe, right? And those normally work against each other, right? And so you kind of have to strike a balance. But I've found that for me, lighter seems better, less hamstring effort. You know, my hamstrings don't lock up when I'm in light shoes. You do more damage on your quad, you're pounding more, and so your muscles are more shredded. So I wouldn't recommend to anyone 5 days out from a marathon deciding they ought to go with a lighter shoe than they've been training with. You know, that's something that needs done in practice. But I do a lot of my long marathon tempos in the Kinvaras. And I think those are a great shoe when I'm headed out for a long run that I really want to get after, or a long tempo that I'm getting after, and my legs need a little bit more cushioning. I will do the Type A's for at least a couple tempos and for a lot of the intervals, just to make sure I'm ready for the pounding that's going to come when I pull them on race day, right? But then I found, you know, the Zealots were my favorite shoe because it's has a little bit less drop. I'm very neutral. Neutral feet. It has a little bit less drop, so I feel like a little bit more, you know, closer to just feeling natural running, as opposed to I'm in this big shoe with a lot of cushioning. But it seems like when I get into marathon training, I gravitate towards the Triumph on those off days because I'm just so beat up that I just want pillows. So that's what I use on my off days in marathon training.
Yeah, they're definitely nice for those days. And definitely proving your point that you do like to run in a variety. And anyone who comes in my house always laughs at me as well with all the running shoes by the door.
Yes.
And so you mentioned...
My wife always says, do you really need all of these?
Yes, I do. In all the colors. And then, so you said that, you know, you do the Type A's and they do beat your legs up a little bit more. So do you find... after the race, after the marathon, you know, most people are beat up anyway, but would you say that you probably are more sore after those races since you've been wearing the Type A, or is it not that much of a difference at that point?
It's hard to say, right? Because a marathon is going to thrash you no matter what you're wearing, right?
Yes.
So it's all relative. So yeah, I don't know how much more beat up I am. I mean, the physics say that if you don't have as much cushion, your muscles are going to sustain more micro tears and things like that, right? And so I know that they're more beat up, but I don't know that I would say that I could feel that they're more beat up.
Okay.
I'm not about to try racing a marathon in the Endorphin Racers, even though I love those super
yes. stuff.
I think that the Type A's are minimalist enough for me.
Yeah, definitely minimalist. Okay, and one more thing I wanted to mention before we get to the final kick round is, you know, you are a family man. You have your wife, Erica, as you mentioned, and your three kids. How do you manage to keep them as the priority for you during those moments when you have to put your training first? I mean, I know it's tempting. There's a lot of elite runners and professionals out there who kind of have to be selfish to get the most out of their training. But how do you keep your family in the front of your mind?
You know, the family time is what keeps, you know, it's what makes it all worth it to me anyways, right? I think, like, there's few people who really care about what you do in life, right? And my wife and kids are some of the few that really do care. And so it's not, you know, to me, it's not worth putting them on the back burner to go accomplish something that no one else is going to care about anyways, right? And so, and they've been a very fun part of it. But I think the credit for how I've been able to balance that is really due to my wife. She's just so supportive. You know, she'll move up to altitude and live out of hotel rooms, cooking me healthy meals out of a crock pot with three kids while I train, right? And so to her, it's worth the sacrifice to be around dad. And so she's been a huge blessing there in kind of facilitating that. But it really, the training cycle kind of augments with kids well. I mean, my kids got to take a nap in the afternoon. I want a nap in the afternoon, right? So I'll get up in the morning, I'll get my workout in, I'll come back, we'll have breakfast together. Maybe we go to a park where I can do some stretching while I'm playing and have some fun with my kids. And then we go home, we take a 2-hour nap. And that's exactly what I need. And then I wake up before they wake up from their nap and I go out for another run. And we, you know, and then I put on the Normatec boots and watch, you know, Disney movies or cartoons, or my wife's a massage therapist too.
And oh, so that's nice.
She's always there too. And so, you know, oftentimes she'll be working on me in the evening while we're spending some other family time. And so I guess that the answer to that is that, it's important to me to keep them a priority. And so that's one part of it. But the real part is probably this, that my wife is so supportive that she's willing to make it all happen. And it requires sacrifices on her behalf to make it fun for all of us. Mm-hmm. And her kind of filling in the cracks where I have to step back. And, she sacrifices as much as I do, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure at this point, your successes are as much, she feels like, are her successes with
Absolutely.
How happy she is.
So she doesn't get quite the street cred that she deserves in terms of her successes being equal to mine. But certainly in my view, she sacrificed every bit as much as I have for those mm-hmm. dreams.
And how did you luck out getting the massage therapist for a wife? That's pretty lucky.
I sent her to massage therapy school after we got married. She always wanted to be a massage therapist. Anyone out there shopping for a spouse, it's certainly not a bad prerequisite, right? But she's been awesome. She always wanted to do that, and it's been a big blessing.
That's great.
She knows my body, my muscles very well. And she keeps me running straight.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful and just ideal for a professional runner. And what is next for you? Do you have any plans?
You know, I don't know yet. We've taken this break from the competition break after the Olympics has been the biggest break from competition I've had since I served an LDS mission after high school. And so it's been a big break. And so we haven't put anything on the calendar yet. We're just waiting for my fitness to come back to where I think, all right, we're ready to go. I anticipate a spring marathon, but we'll have to see where that ends up falling.
Well, we'll be looking forward to finding out where that is. Okay, we are just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, and we will be right back with the final kick round.
Thank you to Saucony for sponsoring this podcast. Saucony is the favorite brand of runners everywhere. Now, I might be a little biased, but I absolutely love their running apparel, accessories, and of course, shoes. I've been running in Saucony for almost 3 years, and I love the brand like a friend. They don't just make fun clothes and shoes in beautiful colors, or cool colors for my male listeners, but this is a brand that actually cares about us as runners, not lumping us in with other sports. Saucony truly puts the time and effort into thinking what we actually want and need, and to me, that means a lot. My favourite shoes are the Saucony Ride for training runs and the Saucony Fast Twitch for workouts and races. And I've also been trying out the new Freedom ISO they have coming out in December. It's been getting a lot of buzz, and I can definitely see why. They're awesome! Get 10% off at saucony.com by using coupon code TINA. Just don't get mad at me if you can't stop buying things on the website. I know I want it all, and I'm sure you will too. Thanks to Body Health for sponsoring this podcast. So what is Body Health, you ask? Well, as you probably know, the food and supplement industry is kind of corrupt, and it can be so overwhelming to find products that will not cause us to grow an extra arm in 10 years. I'm joking, of course, but you know what I mean, right? It's hard to know who to trust. Well, I can give you one company who can be trusted, and that's Body Health. Their products are not only going to help you recover and therefore improve as a runner, but their motto of optimizing health and vitality is what they truly believe in. I take 5 to 10 of their perfect amino tablets every single day, and it's made a huge difference to my recovery time. If you don't believe me, listen to this. Your body can only absorb and use 18% of the protein in whey and soy protein, and only 48% in eggs. But our bodies can use 99% of the protein in perfect amino. Impressive, right? You can enter to win a pack of 6 bottles by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth, or you can get 10% off using coupon code TINA10.
All right, Jared, I just have 5 more questions for you, starting with the greatest advice you've ever received.
So the best advice I have ever received is to just be your best. And I think, you know, so often we get caught up in trying to be someone else's best, right? Or comparing ourselves to what someone else has. And I think that has really fueled my confidence that I don't have to do that, right? I don't have to be Eliud Kipchoge. I just have to be Jared Ward.
Yep, and it's working well for you. Okay, what is your favorite running book or blog?
I struggled over this question, right? Because there's been so many that I've liked, but I think one of my favorite reads is still Running with the Buffaloes.
Mm-hmm.
read it in elementary, or not in elementary school. I think it was in junior high. And I still love going back and reading about that success year that they had their story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great choice. What would you like to tell a new runner?
Be consistent. I think, you know, we see New Year's resolutions that last for 2 weeks because they tried to start something that's not sustainable. And I think if you can get onto some program that's sustainable, that you can really continue to carry and be consistent with it, you set yourself up for long-term success. So never cash out long-term success for short-term gains.
Yes. Great advice. Very helpful. What was your pre-race meal?
So I like a potato and like a lean piece of meat, protein, and some vegetables. I think that potato, for some reason, does the energy for me and keeps my inflammation down, right? I think the risk of a lot of other sources of carbohydrate that we can carbo load is that we put our inflammation through the roof, and the marathon the next morning will do plenty of that for you. And so I like to gravitate towards lower inflammatory sources of carbohydrate.
Yep. Good. And I'm the same thing, potato.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. All right. And finally, your favorite running product.
I love Saucony's new Life on the Run set. Have you worn some of that stuff?
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes.
And so it is. That's like more chilling stuff, I guess, right? They make a lot of good stuff. But I think I love just hanging out in those sweats.
Mm-hmm. For anyone listening, you're talking about the sweatpants that I think you're referring to. And then there's either a sleeveless hoodie or a sleeved hoodie. Which one are you talking about there?
So are you talking about the short sleeve one? So is there a sleeveless and a short sleeve?
No, I think there's just a regular sleeve, like a normal hoodie.
Normal hoodie? So the short sleeved hoodie is kind of crazy looking, right? Mm-hmm. It's different. I like the long sleeve just because I feel more comfortable in it. Like I feel like I'm caged up in my hoodie, yeah. And I'm me. But they certainly tried some new things, like editing those sleeves. Kind of cool.
Yeah, no, and I'm seeing other brands doing the same thing, so it's obviously working. And great choices. And remember, guys, you can use coupon code TINA for 10% off if you need it. All right, Jared, thank you so much for your time today. What is the best way for people to follow you if they want to keep up to date?
I do best on Twitter. I'm not an awesome social media person, but I try to keep updated on Twitter, and my handle is jwardy21.
Okay, great. And I will put a link in the show notes. All right, thank you so much for your time. This has been fantastic, and I'm sure people have pulled so much from it. So thank you, and best of luck moving forward.
Thanks, Tina.
I know he calls himself a nerd, but I just think he's such a great guy. And for us runners who love our sport, his work on pacing is just awesome. And I hope you took as much from that interview as I did. Let me know if you do decide to try his way of looking at races and if it does help you. Well, we've reached the end of 2016, and next week is the first episode of 2017. How is it 2017 already? Do you have any New Year's resolutions? I never really find I do very well at those, but I have a guest coming on next week who's going to help us all with behavior change and how we can not just keep up with these resolutions for the first few weeks of January, but we can make them lifestyle changes for good. Josh Trent of Wellness Force Radio is one of those people you can just sit and listen to all day, as the way they talk is just so powerful. I can't wait for you all to meet him, and I look forward to hearing what you are working on in your life. So tweet at me, at Tina Muir, with your resolutions or what you would like to work on in 2017. So I was hoping we would be able to launch Run to the Top Extra Kick, our brand new Ask the Coach podcast, at the start of the year. But I'm sorry to say that I just haven't managed to get it ready on time. And I really apologize about that, but it's almost here. So if you have questions you would like to submit, you can visit runnersconnect.net/extra-kick to leave a voicemail, or you can submit your questions through the contact form. The Runners Connect coaches will be answering your questions on this new podcast. And if you have a question, the chances are other people are also wondering that, so you will be helping others, and You can also give a shout out to your own website or your blog. So hopefully that can give you a bit of traffic yourself. So I want to thank you to everyone who has helped me with feedback about this podcast and about anything else throughout the year. And as we close out this year, I would like to take a moment to thank you for a fantastic 2016. And just thank you for every moment you've spent tuning in. Your support means the world to me. So let's make 2017 an even better year. And have a great week and happy 2017.